Okay. So what we'll do is we'll go through the mock exam. So we'll go through the six questions that are on there. It is important to clarify on the real exam, you have to answer four, not all six, okay? So I'll say this a number of times, but I mean, you've been through it before with the certificate course, but important to divide your time evenly, okay? If you've got 2 hours to do the exam, you have 4 questions, that's half an hour each, okay? So you know, don't fall into the trap of doing 45 minutes, 50 minutes on one question, because the max I can give you is only a quarter of the marks that are available, okay? I cannot give you any points from another question for a really, really, really good first question. Okay, so we'll go through the six questions, give you some indication as to how to answer them, and then what we'll do is I'll switch off that one, and then just only on the screen I will turn on the real exam, and I'll have a look at it, and I'll try and give you some pointers as to what's actually in that. Okay, all right. So we'll probably spend half an hour, maybe 40 minutes or so, but it may not even take that long just to go through the first six questions on the mock exam. So hopefully, do you all have a copy of the mock exam first of all?
Yeah.
You do? Okay, very good. So question one on the mock exam. Henry Mintzberg identified 3 main role classes and 10 roles that most managers appear to occupy from time to time. Select one role class and give details of its associated roles. Okay, so that second bit is important. Okay, so I mean, you won't necessarily get any bonus marks for giving me the 2 role classes that you don't necessarily want to talk about. Okay, so you know, you can certainly by all means do a little bit of contrasting and so on, but if it says one role class, let's talk about that role class and not all of them. Okay, now given I don't know which one you would have picked if you were going to go through it, I'll go through them all. Okay. So in terms of the 3 role classes, first of all, so we'll call it 3 role classes and then I'll break down as to what happens underneath each one of them. So the first one is interpersonal roles, second one is informational role, and then the third one is decisional roles. So there's 3 subcategories under each of the first two, and then there's 4 subcategories under the last one, okay? So interpersonal role. So what does an interpersonal role mean, first of all? It means that managers have formal status and duties involving people inside and outside of the organization, okay? So the 3 subcategories they are a figurehead, they are a leader, and they're also a liaison officer, okay? So if you chose interpersonal role as being the one that you want to cover off, those are the 3 categories that you're going to cover off, all right? Now you have about half an hour to answer each question, so I'd probably expect, realistically, I mean, I'll have a better idea after I see the exams, but realistically I'd expect maybe maybe about 2 pages in that half hour, maybe a little, you know, if you can go a little bit further, great, but two, no more than 2.5. So just about, the only reason I'm saying that is divide your space up evenly, okay? Maybe talk about briefly what the overall heading means, and then go into the 3 interpersonal bits, okay? So you're probably talking about half a page on each of them, maybe slightly more, okay? So interpersonal roles, so just to repeat, managers have formal status and duties involving people inside and outside the organization, okay? So that means they are a figurehead, okay? So what does a figurehead mean? It means they have symbolic duties, okay? They receive awards, they present awards, they present gifts, they sign documents, they do that type of stuff, okay? They're a figurehead, all right? Whenever awards are being presented, usually they get the highest person they can in the company to go and present it, okay? Because that adds gravitas to the award, okay? They're also a leader, okay? What do leaders do? They hire, they fire, they motivate the staff members. Certainly they certainly motivate the staff members that are to report into them. All going well, they can motivate the staff members all the way down throughout the organization. They develop the skills of their staff members that are reporting into them. They lead by example. But that's a leader, okay? So that's the second thing they do. They're a figurehead, they're also a leader, okay? Third thing they do is they're also a liaison officer, okay? So what does that mean? It means they network inside and outside of the organization, okay? If there's a dispute between 2 departments, if sales and credit cannot agree on some key strategic direction, this person will probably step in and will get representatives from both groups into a room and will work with them to try to come to a common solution, okay? So they are a liaison officer within the organization. They're also a liaison officer outside of the organization, okay? So they will deal with unions, they will deal with the government, okay? All right, so if negotiations need to happen with them. If a statement needs to be released from the company, this person will also release that statement, okay? You may get warnings, we certainly get warnings anywhere we are, regularly that if a news story happens to break that may or may not involve us, you know, there's warnings kind of do not talk to the press, because the, you know, the implication is that we speak for the entire organization. Maybe I don't. Okay, proper and research statement will go out through the appropriate person at the right time. Okay, so that's it. Okay, so they're interpersonal roles: figurehead, leader, liaison officer. Okay, that's one of the roles that a manager has. All right. Second type of role that they have is informational roles. Okay, managers receive, collect, disseminate information about internal events and also external events. Okay, if you're leading up an entire organization, part of your job is to read. Part of your job is to look at numbers. What are the numbers? Numbers are going up. Why are they going up? Numbers are going down. Why are they going down? Okay, identify the threats. Identify the opportunities. Make the most of your opportunities and minimize the threats. Okay. So that falls under three categories then. So we if you're a manager, you monitor, okay? Managers seek and screen information. They use that information to understand. They use that information to detect change. And they use their information, as I just said, to identify problems and opportunities, okay? So they monitor information, okay? A certain amount of time spent reading. They disseminate information. So it's no good just to read all the information and keep it to yourself. Say, okay, that's interesting. Keep it to yourself. They also disseminate information, okay? They will have meetings with their direct reports. They'll have one-to-one meetings if that's the right way to do it. They'll have group meetings if that's the right way to do it. They'll have town halls with the entire organization if that's the right way to do it. They disseminate information, okay? No good keeping it to yourself. If it's a 100-person organization and you're the only one who knows about it, that's 99 people wandering around going the wrong direction, okay? Potentially going the wrong direction anyway, okay? They disseminate the information, okay? And then finally, they're a spokesperson, okay? So similar to the liaison officer, they're also a spokesperson, okay? They represent the organization and the staff to outsiders, okay? So like I just said, similar to the liaison officer, they will be talking to the press, to unions, to the government, and they will represent the organization and the interests of the organization when they're doing it, okay? It doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing. I mean, the government might call them in and say, okay, what do you think about, I don't know, what do you think about Brexit? What do you need in relation to Brexit to survive, you know? They may call them in to discuss that kind of stuff, okay? Okay, but the manager will be the spokesperson for the organization. That they're not gonna call each of us in individually, okay? So that's the informational role: monitor, dissemination, and spokesperson. Those are the three categories, okay? About a half a page on each, okay? And then finally, if you want to go for the third one, there's decisional roles, okay? They make decisions. That's the job that people have to do. That's the job that managers have to do. They have to make decisions, okay? And there's four different areas where they have to make decisions, okay? They have to be entrepreneurs, okay? So they have to initiate and have to oversee projects, okay? It's very rare, you'll never these days see a manager who's brought in to do a job and told, okay, keep the organization exactly as it is now, okay? They will always be asked, okay, let's maximize this or that, or the other opportunity, let's make that better, cheaper, faster, whatever, okay? So they will oversee these projects, okay? And spot opportunities to improve the organization's performance, okay? Managers will have visions, okay? They'll try and take the company in that direction. They're disturbance handlers, okay? When things go wrong, they're ultimately the people who will have to sort it out, okay? They take corrective action in relation to problems or conflict situations. So they are disturbance handlers. They handle those situations, okay? Good example of that would have been the Lewis discussions a number of months back. Was that the autumn? There was somebody who was on our TVs pretty much every night who was acting as a disturbance handler, okay? He was representing the company. He was acting as a disturbance handler in that, okay? Resource allocators, okay? They have to decide. They will get a certain pot of money, be it from the shareholders or from board of directors or whatever, but they will get a certain pot of money every year, or they will know what the pot of money is available to spend every year, and they have to decide who gets it, okay? So they have a responsibility when it comes to prioritizing and allocating time, money, material, staff, equipment, okay? Okay, if you're running a hospital and every department wants a new x-ray machine, but you only have the money for two, you have to decide what departments get them and what ones have to survive with the old ones for another year, okay? So they will allocate resources. And finally, they're negotiators, okay? So again, similar to the spokesperson and the liaison officer from above, they're negotiators. They will defend the organization and they will discuss with suppliers, with customers, with staff, with trade unions, okay? So I mean, you'll often see, I mean, if a big deal is signed for a company to supply it, you know, the head of the company will actually turn up for the actual signing of the documents. They may have had nothing to do with the negotiations. They may have nothing to do with, obviously they'll be briefed and given a bit of insight as to what it is, but if there's a big deal being signed with a supplier or a customer, the number one person running the organization will probably be wheeled out to say a few words and to smile for the photographs and to and do the actual signature. Okay. Okay. But they may also be heading up the negotiation. They may have been taking it from day. They may have been taking it from day one. If it's important enough, they may well have done it. Okay. So that's question one. So I mean, you know, you don't cover off all of that. What you do is you select one of those. If this particular question comes up, you select one of them, and you cover off the three, or in the case of the last one, the four subheadings that there are in that. So you're probably talking a bit over a half page on each of those bits of discussion. Okay.
And is that question going to come up?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Nope. Just an example of how to answer it.
Okay.
But no, that particular question is not on the exam.
Okay.
Okay. So that's question one. That's question one. Okay. Question two. outline the types and causes of conflict, and what guidance would you put in place for effective conflict resolution? So it's important to read the question, okay? It is important to also count, I don't know, either the question marks or the full stops that you see in the question. So if you take that question as an example, outline the types and causes of conflict, okay? One question mark. What guidelines would you put in place for effective conflict resolution? Second question mark, okay? So you can kind of take that. It's not officially a two-parter question, but you can kind of take it as a two-parter question. You can actually really take it as kind of almost a three-parter question, because it says, what are the types and what are the causes, okay? So the way I would read that, if I were you, and I'm the one correcting it, so my guidance would be rules, I suppose, in this case. The way I would read that would be outline the types and cause of conflict, one question mark, so that's half my time. And then what guidelines would you put in place for effective conflict resolution? That's the second half of my time, okay? So I would spend basically 7.5 minutes on the types, 7.5 minutes on the causes, and then 15 minutes on the guidelines that you put in place for effective conflict resolution, okay? That's the way I would answer that particular question, okay? Now, in terms of the actual answer to the question, what are the types? Well, there's a couple of different types. I mean, you can break it down. First of all, you can break it down between constructive conflict and destructive conflict. That's one way of breaking it down. Second way of breaking it down is you have one individual versus another. Okay, that's where a lot of that can just come down to personality clashes or where they're defending territory. You have one individual versus a group. Okay. So I think the scenario that I've given before when we do these prep sessions when we're starting the courses, frequently where that comes from is if one person is working really, really hard and the rest of the group say, hang on, hold on a sec, you're making us all look bad here. Or you have the reverse, you have everyone else working really, really hard and you have one person delaying everybody. And that you will have scenarios where if that goes on, the group will turn on the individual, okay? You have subgroups versus the main group, okay? You ever worked in a place where, I don't know, you're maybe part of a team of 10, maybe three people go off into a little clique, and that clique becomes more and more powerful. Maybe a fourth person joins the clique, and then all of a sudden the manager is a bit of a problem because they're kind of, it's manager versus that kind of clique, and there's a big influence on it. So subgroups versus the main group, okay? You can have one group versus another group, okay? So that frequently comes up when you've allocation of resources. Okay, why is it that they get all the budget and we get none of the budget? Any questions? No, we're good.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
No, you're all right. So one group versus the other. So you know, you may have scenarios where why is it that sales get all the budget and collections get none? Why is it collections get all the budget and sales get none? So when there's allocation resources, the clashes will develop. When the status, questions of status and so on, we're more important than you are, will come up for discussion. One that definitely comes up is where there's a dependency on another. Okay, if you're part of a process, if you're step four in a 10-step process, and the people in charge of step three keep delaying you, and you keep getting kicked because the process keeps getting delayed, that will prompt a clash. Okay, you'll have scenarios where the entire group goes after the group responsible for step three and say, what is wrong with you guys? Okay, and then you can have conflict where you have one organization versus another group, so trade union versus employer. Okay. Okay, so constructive and destructive conflict, that's one way of looking at it, so I'll cover that. And then I'd also cover the five different other areas, one group versus another, one individual versus another, one versus a group, subgroup versus the main group, one group versus another, or organization-wide group versus an outsider, trade union, government, regulator, something like that. All right. So that would be what you would need to do the first half of the first half of the question, if you want to look at it that way. So the second part of that was causes. Okay, what are the causes? So there were two authors on this. So it is worthwhile, you will get credit in the exam if you mention authors, okay? So if authors have come up with some of these things, it's worth mentioning who they are, okay? So one author that wrote about the causes of conflict was David Evans, okay? When he wasn't touring with U2. So he summarized the causes of divisive conflict as being perceived inequitable allocation of resources, interpersonal friction, differences in status, prestige, and power, similar to things I just mentioned, clashing of objectives, differing set of values or beliefs, or authority being exercised incorrectly. That last one's a good one, actually. I mean, if you have authority being exercised when there should be no authority, then that's a problem. Okay. So those are what's really six mentioned then by David Evans. A better one is potentially Hannaway and Hunt, which of the two would be the one that I would prefer. So that's Hannaway and Hunt, which was 4 years later in 1999. They suggest the sources of conflict might include conflict regarding roles, so who is responsible for what. Some of these I've already shared with you, actually. Interpersonal conflict, differences between individuals. Task interdependence, which is the example I just gave you a moment ago. Shared resources, you know, when you have offices and equipment, you know, if you've ever been in an office where you're fighting over space, those are our desks, yeah, but we need them, but you're not using them, yeah, but we're going to need them soon. a lot of, you know, people are very protective about a desk. You know?
The air conditioning is the biggest one.
Yeah, it's too hot. Yeah,
one person wants it off, one person wants it off.
It's too hot, it's too cold.
It's too cold.
You can't win.
Yeah, you can't win.
Women are on the
Can you have it on in the morning and off in the afternoon?
So shared resources, offices, equipment, staff. Staff, you know, the best example of that is you ever worked with somebody who's going to work with our team in the morning and somebody else's team in the afternoon. And you find the morning drifts on to about 2 p.m. Or if it's a Monday, you know, if they're yours on a Monday, that you know, you lose the bank holidays, or you know, or it's Friday, it's always Fridays, they want off. So there you are. So you know, certainly a conflict there. Differing perceptions and beliefs, unions versus management. You know, I mean, union management, the conflict just basically comes down to the different types of people. You know, they. Not necessarily both wrong, or not necessarily both right or both wrong, but they have different beliefs in the way that they see the world. Goal differences, production versus quality. Okay, some people are obsessed with getting out as many items as you possibly can. There's others who don't really mind if you only get one item out, but it needs to be right. And then you have differences in operational approaches. So the approach of sales towards customers versus credit control. Sales will love customers till the day they die. Credit control will have a bit more of a business type of approach with them. Might say yes, but a bit more than sales would. Okay. So you've David Evans who listed off six different things, and then you've Hannaway and Hunt who listed off another seven. So that's a good indication as to what the causes of conflict are. Now, how to manage it, which is the second half of the question. So I would devote half of my time or 15 minutes to this. So how to manage conflict. Managing conflict means eliminating conflict that is unnecessary and destructive through effective conflict resolution. Stimulating conflict can be helpful and constructive. So the guidelines for effective conflict resolution would be identify the real source of the problem and try to remove it. Okay, get to the crux of it. Okay, if there's rows going on, a lot of things can come up in the discussions, but in reality it can be coming down to one thing. You know, could come down to one team is paid more than the other. You know, they might fire all sorts of accusations, but that might be what it comes down to, okay? Or it might be that one team are delaying where the other team are working really, really hard. You need to come to the crux of the problem, find out what the real problem is. It's probably only one, okay? Establish clear rules and procedures, okay? Both for the negotiations, but also afterwards. Establish clear communication channels, okay? Did you ever notice that if you set up kind of a weekly meeting or a daily meeting or something, conflict just goes away by just checking on things a lot more regularly? You know, a lot of times conflict comes up when one person thinks that you're doing something, in reality you're not, you know. If you start checking every day to make absolutely certain that it is being done, sometimes that goes away. Establish clear goals. What is it you want to achieve? Okay, so forget about the noise. What is it that we want to get? Be sensitive to individuals' needs, okay? So I mean, if somebody needs an arm around the shoulder or needs a quiet discussion to kind of put things in the past that need to be put in the past, then that needs to be done. Establish effective problem-solving procedures, okay? So there are professional ones that you can try and engage with. Choose an appropriate approach and look for ones that avoid win-lose, okay? You don't want a scenario where one department feels they've won and the other department feels they haven't. It might end the conflict for now, but it'll rear its head up again, okay? Guaranteed. Okay. So that in a nutshell is a kind of summary of what I'd say for question two. So that's resolved, that's on conflict. Any questions on that? Nope, okay. So question three, define and discuss empowerment, okay? So do watch out for the word discuss on the exam, okay? Because discuss means, you know, give the advantages, give the disadvantages, and tell me what you think is best. You know, is it good or is it bad, okay? Doesn't necessarily, you know, there's no right or wrong answer if you're telling me. Okay, so discuss empowerment for me would mean you're defining it, but you're also going to tell me, is it good or is it bad, okay? Don't just talk all the way around empowerment. At the end of the question, I'm no wiser as to whether or not you think it's a good thing or a bad thing. Do discuss it, okay? So define and discuss empowerment, okay? Then a full stop, okay? So that for me would be 7.5 minutes defining. Yeah, you might necessarily need 7.5 minutes to define empowerment, but do put a bit of effort into it. Sometimes we ask a question that says define empowerment, and people say empowerment is the delegation and power of authorities to employees, and they'll leave it at that, and then move on. It's a little bit short, you know, do develop it a little bit. You know. Discuss empowerment, so another 7.5 minutes there, and then you have the second bit, which comes before the next full stop, which is describe how you might apply staff empowerment within the credit function, okay? So I would devote about 15 minutes to that, okay? So I'm going to quickly cover off the first bit, so I'm not going to cover off the second bit in as much detail, because that essentially will come down to a personal decision on yourselves. You know, if you work for a large organization, you can do empowerment in one way. If you work for a smaller organization, you potentially can only empower in a different way. You know, if you are the only person doing credit control, it might be that you suggest hiring an administrator, for instance, and then they take some of the paperwork off you, and you're allowed to focus on the main bit. You know, that's probably the best example of empowerment on that. If you work for a larger organization, your options might be a bit more. You might have a bit more options because you might have more staff that you can potentially empower stuff to. Okay. But if we look at the definition is the delegation of power and authorities to employees. Okay, that basically is the definition, but do talk a little bit about what it would mean. The process of empowerment involves the following six elements. So you need a commitment of empowerment from top management. Okay, if top management are going to be checking, if you report directly to top management and they're checking absolutely every single thing you do, you don't really work in an environment that would encourage empowerment yourself, you know? Okay, if they're checking everything gets, every letter, every email, every phone call gets read, you know, that doesn't encourage you to then empower stuff to other people, okay? So you need a commitment from top management. You need to consult with other managers in the workplace regarding policy implementation. Maybe other people have empowered things before, okay? How did they do it? You need to train managers on the concept of empowerment and their leadership roles, okay? You need to train managers to step away. You also need to train the empowered as well, okay? You need to teach them new skills, new things, and you need to tell them how it's going to work. What checks are you going to do? If you empower them, but you're immediately in on top of them every 5 minutes, checking, that's not necessarily going to work. If you do the reverse, you empower them and then you walk away and you say, well, that's now his job, that's not necessarily going to work either, okay? It could all fall down, okay? So you need to agree, well, once a day or once a week or once a month or whatever it is, we're going to check a sample of your work, we're going to check all your work, whatever it is we're going to do, okay? Maybe we don't check any of your work, but we have general discussions as to how it's going. Okay. Implementation of empowerment. So, you know, are you going to implement it in one fell swoop? Is it a light switch type thing where on a Friday you're not doing it and on a Monday you're doing all of it? Or are you going to gradually start empowering people, giving them one task, two tasks, three tasks? Obviously, the second one is probably the wiser. And then final thing, evaluation. So, as I just said, are you going to have regular meetings to evaluate how it's going and how often are you going to have them? Okay. Empowering employees gives them four elements that enable them to act more freely to accomplish their jobs, okay? So employees receive, how does it do that? It means employees receive information about the organization's performance a bit more, okay? They're a bit more responsible, okay? So they're gonna learn a bit more about how the organization is going, okay? There's nothing worse than an organization than having 90% of people knowing nothing about how the organization is doing, okay? You do need, you know, people do need to take an interest in the role. This is one of the advantages of empowerment can give them, okay? They'll see a little bit above, over the hill. Employees will have increased knowledge and skills, okay? Very, very handy for kind of, we're coming into holiday season, okay? For obvious reasons, so people will be looking to get away. It is very handy that, you know, if you potentially need to go away for 2 weeks, very handy you can leave somebody in charge, take over your stuff, okay? Big advantage of requirements, okay? So employees will have more knowledge, they'll have more confidence and more power to take decisions, okay? Yeah, we've probably all worked with people over the years who maybe don't take any decisions, but partially is because they don't feel empowered to do so. You know? They need to check every single thing. If they can never make a customer happy on the spot by saying, you know what, I'll get rid of that, I'll write that off, I'll get rid of that for you. They need to check every single thing, it means they're not been empowered, okay? So they can potentially do it. And you can potentially then ultimately reward them more on the organization's performance. And the more tied into how a performance, how the company's going, they can be more tied into it, okay? So we mentioned the word discuss. So I mean, you know, we need to kind of look at some of the benefits. You know, we've kind of covered off some of the benefits there. Workers are more motivated. Organizational benefits as well. Customers will get a more rapid response to solving their problems. Okay, that's a big one. Okay, people are empowered, which means they can make a decision. And just check with their manager and say, oh, let me see if I can write off that €5 for you. You know, better to just be able to say, yep, done. Okay, you know, much, much better to be much happier customer. If they feel there's three lines of approval, they say, what kind of company am I dealing with?
Okay. So
problems can usually be solved, so as I just said, problems can usually be solved at the point of customer contact, enhancing customer goodwill. Abilities and experience of the employees are further utilized. You're probably gonna have happier employees. You know, if an employee is just doing one job over and over and over and over again, they will very quickly say, well, what is the overall point of this, okay? If they feel that their judgment is being used, you know, everybody has judgment. If people feel their judgment is being used and their opinions matter and they can make decisions, they're probably gonna be happier in their workplace, okay? And it can lead to cost savings because you can potentially have managers who then are able to do more of the level above. Managers again can do more of the level above and so on. So, you know, you'll frequently find this lock-on benefits up the organization. Managers benefit because when you empower managers, they're better regarded by their subordinates, okay? I mean, managers who are seen as good people developers are much better regarded in the organization than people who maybe run a tight ship but have to check absolutely flipping everything, you know? Because as soon as they are on a day off or they get sick, the whole thing falls over, okay? So people who have developed, definitely know from my own experience, people who are people managers are much better regarded by everyone in the organization, by their peers, by their subordinates, by their managers themselves, okay? You improve communication and performance. Okay, more people will know what's going on in the organization. Increased awareness of the need for transformational versus incremental leadership. Okay, so I mean, you'll be more aware in terms of, you know, if you're delegating stuff, you're going to have improved communication with your staff members. You're going to be more aware of the challenges that they have in terms of, you know, if you can't empower somebody because they're too busy doing a job that you feel is basically ridiculous. You know, you can potentially then make suggestions in terms of eliminating that job or automating that job or bringing in maybe somebody at a lower level to kind of do that job and freeing up the person to spend more time doing what we see as being value added stuff. Okay, so I mean, you know, that's a little bit of a whistle stop tour, but those are the type of things that you'd be looking to talk about if you're going covering off empowerment. Okay? Empowerment is not specifically on the exam.
Oh.
Which is the downside of these sessions, you know, talk about it. Okay, but the concept is, you know, this is how to answer the general questions, okay? You might slot out environment, you might put motivation, for instance, in instead, okay? Might be exactly the same words, the only words that swapped out is motivation. That's the type of way you would answer it, okay? So question 4. Staff selection process consists of 4 clear stages discussed with examples, okay? So what are those 4 stages basically? So 4 stages are 1, create a job specification and a person specification. 2, attract suitable candidates. 3, select the most suitable person. And then 4, make an offer to the successful applicant, okay? So those are the 4 stages of recruitment, okay? Or staff selection, as it's called in this question. So I mean, just look for the keywords, you know, discuss with examples, okay? So discuss is there again, okay? Is this good? Is it bad? You know, it's open for other suggestions in terms of, okay, maybe CVs are not the best way to go. You know, gives you an opportunity to raise other examples. Now, it's not an assignment, so don't go through an entire kind of case, you know, as to why you should ditch the CV and, I don't know, replace it with, I don't know, group selection or something like that. You know, you don't need to do that, okay? But there's nothing wrong with kind of saying, I think CVs should be replaced with X. And this is why I think it should be, that's fine. And if you have a number of those examples, it's gonna lead to a good answer to your overall question. Okay, all right. But it's not an assignment, so don't go off on a big long tangent and then say, oh God, I never covered off the other 3 areas, and then you stick in the other 3 at the end. It's not gonna be a strong answer, okay? So in terms of the job design and the person specification, so what needs to be in the job design needs to satisfy the requirements of the organization for productivity, efficiency, needs to satisfy the needs of the individuals. It also needs to be a job that's worth doing. Okay, nobody's gonna apply for it if it's not a job worth doing. If you're just, I don't know, if you're throwing water out of a bath and the tap is still on, for example, you know, people are very quickly gonna say, well, this is rather pointless, isn't it? So nobody's gonna apply for it. Process starts with a job analysis, job enlargement, job enrichment. So those are the type of things you need to be kind of putting in. So call out the tasks that people should be doing, indicate how this is gonna be an enriching job. You know, you see it yourself, you apply for jobs, you know. It won't just say, okay, you will do this, and then you will do that, and you will do that, and you will do that. It'll say, this provides an opportunity for the successful individual to do. That's the way it's phrased, okay? All right? Okay, because the jobs do need to, if you have to get the job done, it needs to encompass other things, okay? The person specification, unlike the job ad, this covers off, this focuses on the person rather than the work that needs to be done. And there's three things that are needed in the person specification. It calls out what knowledge they have. You must have a degree in quantum physics, okay? Calls out the skills they need to have, okay? You need to be good at delivering on deadlines, would be a skill. And it also calls out the attitude you need to have. You need to be flexible and willing to work weekends, and you need to be doing a bit of travel, and you need to be actively seeking transformational changes for our company, okay? That gives you an indication of what type of attitude is needed for the role. Fortunately, the attitude is usually kind of one way. It's not gonna, doesn't usually say, actually, this job would suit perfectly for someone who doesn't want to do anything particularly exciting. Which, you know, there are jobs and also people out there. Okay, so let me see. So the job specification focuses on the job, person specification focuses on the person, okay? So that's step one, okay? So you've done that, you then have to go and source and advertise for your candidate, okay? So you have your various sources, you know, companies, large companies certainly keep on file. Large companies will get inundated with CVs, even when they don't advertise any jobs. They do keep those on file, certainly for a certain period of time anyway, and will draw upon them because they're free, okay? So they'll draw upon them if a vacancy comes up, okay? You know, internally, you can advertise the stuff. You can do it through notice boards or by emails. You know, they do circulate ads internally. Some jobs are only advertised internally, some go external, okay? And if you go external, obviously the most common one is through recruitment agencies, but you've also got to keep in mind, you know, people still do advertise things through the actual newspapers. They do go visit job fairs, visit universities. In the case of our place, they're always looking for Germans, so they do once or twice a year, they go across to Germany to try to recruit German speakers. You know, those are the type of ways that we go about trying to fill the jobs that may be coming up, okay? All right. Third one is select the most appropriate candidate. So usually that's gonna be through an interview, not always, but it's usually through an interview, okay? So interview is the most widely common technique that's used. Interviews need to be structured and well organized. You need to ask specific questions. Ideally, you'd be asking pretty much the same questions to each candidate so you can easily compare them one to the other. Don't do what we sometimes do in our organization, whereby I find that different team leaders are interviewing people for the same role. I say, well, it's going to be very hard for you to compare one versus the other if you haven't met every candidate. So that can be a challenge. So in terms of the interview, candidates need to find out, we need to find out what they know about the job, we need to find out why they think it'd be suitable for the job, and then the candidate in return needs to find out everything they can find out about the job to find out is it something that they want to do, okay? So it's a two-way process, okay? So that's step three, and then step four is select the most appropriate candidate, okay? So you narrow it down, you come to a decision. After you do your checks in terms of references and so on, you need to inform the candidate. You need to always follow up in writing. Upon acceptance of the offer, you need to make arrangements for them starting. You need to get a contract signed. Need to agree and call out the contract what the probation period will be. Candidate ultimately, all going well, completes the probation period successfully and is then a full-time, fully fledged member of the organization. Questions on that one? Okay. From memory, I'll have to double check, but from memory, that's not specifically on the exam either. Okay. But don't worry, I'll be telling you in a few minutes what is an exam. So question five and then also question six are both from the final module. So this is the one which I suppose is closest to Declan's heart, if you like, which is the managing in the credit function. Okay. So it calls out a number of different categories. Question five has one, two, three, there's five, six. Yeah, the six items called out there, and you need to answer four of them, okay? So again, keeping in mind time, you need to kind of say, okay, right, that's 7.5 minutes per item, probably looking for about half a page on each, okay? So please don't give me a page and a half on the first one, and then a line on the second one, and then maybe half a line on the third one, because, you know, they're, you know, the same amount of marks are available for each, okay? So you need to allocate the time. Assuming you know it, you do need to allocate the time evenly, okay? So the first one that was called out in the mock exam, so we'll be talking in detail about this in a few minutes, but comparing to the real one, but the first one's called out in the mock exam is selecting customers using credit as a driver, okay? So again, we're looking for kind of about half a page, you know, a few kind of tips in terms of what you put in there. It's better if you involve the credit team early in the process, so, you know, the whole kind of concept of kind of getting the credit team involved as soon as sales get a lead, not when sales actually convert the deal or close the deal, and certainly not after it. Sales should be telling the credit controller, this is the 50 customers we're going to be targeting next week, can you do a quick credit check and confirm the ones you'd be happy to give credit to? That's the type of thing you're trying to get to. Divide customers into high, medium, and low risk, okay? Got to keep in mind, you don't necessarily turn down a customer just because they're high risk, it's just you manage it in a different way, okay? Maybe put them on prepayments, maybe put them on partial prepayments, shorter credit terms, something like that. Deposit, you know, things like that, okay? But that, in a nutshell, is what you would be saying in terms of that. Discount versus late payment interest is the second one, okay? So high risk and high value customers should be contacted before the due date. Medium range ones, you give them a couple of days, and the low risk ones, the low value ones, you automate that as much as possible, so it should be letters going out nice and quickly. You might want to consider giving discounts for payment in advance, so maybe 3% for payment in advance, 2% for immediate payment terms, and then maybe 1% if they pay within 7 days, okay? Okay, discounts incentives can be very, very strong. It's how Microsoft is one of the accounts that I've been working on for a number of years, and it's a way that not Microsoft, but the actual people who sell the Microsoft products make a lot of their money is by paying on time and getting actual cash back for paying on time. It can be their cash flow. So if that's versus the late payment interest, so again, you know, you're entitled to charge interest. It's linked to EU legislation. It needs to be no more than, I think it's 7% on top of the interest rate in the EU, which I think is at the moment zero or just or there or thereabouts. So zero or 0.1 or something like that. So anyway, that's the max you can charge on it. But those are the questions you want to be asking yourself in terms of discount versus the late payment fee. It is important, obviously. If you are giving discounts, it needs to come out of your margin, okay? So there's no point giving a 3% discount if your margin is 1, okay? If your margin's 5, you can maybe give 3% discount, but you can't give 3 if it's 1, okay? Ways to manage your cash flow: get paid on time, obtain credit from your suppliers, so get paid as early as possible and delay your suppliers as long as possible. You know, don't pay them early. You get paid early, they don't. That's the kind of rule that you're aiming to get. Get credit lines open with your new suppliers. Revisit your credit lines with your existing suppliers. You know, always worth finding out. Can they extend to, if you've been a good customer for a couple of years, can you get a higher credit limit? Can you maybe go to 90-day payment terms instead of 60, or from 30 to 60, something like that? Bank overdraft, you know, can you get one? Can you get, if you already have one, can you get more? Maybe it's a few years since you looked at it. And final method for improving your cash flow, we're going to discuss in this article is equity capital, okay? So owner invests more money into the company, okay? So those are the five methods of raising additional capital. Of improving your cash flow, okay? Next one, what to do in cases of insolvency, okay? So if a liquidator is appointed, notify the liquidator of the amount owing to your company as soon as possible. As soon as the notification is received, all current and future credit sales should be stopped. So that's the second action you need to take. So you need to notify them, first action. You need to stop supplying them with anything else, second action, okay? If a receiver is appointed, you know, once they've extracted the required amount, their job is done, so you need to facilitate that. And then if an examiner is appointed, and it's proved, you know, you need to work with the examiner in relation to trying to continue the business, okay? It's in everybody's interest the business survives. Well, depending on the type of creditor you actually are, it may be in your interest for an examiner to be appointed or not, okay? But either way, you need to work with the examiner with the intent of trying to get the business to continue on, okay? Once it's done, you know, even if you have potential to appoint a receiver, you can't actually do it, okay? And finally, am I on finally or not? So I have two more left. So internal controls is the next one, okay? First step is to establish who you're dealing with and what the maximum exposure is. So who are your customers? Know your customers. Put them into high, medium, and low risk. Adapt your strategies accordingly. File your invoices every day. These are just basically good housekeeping. Record your cash every day. Check your bank account every morning. Run your monthly and weekly sales analysis and do your monthly reports, okay? And then Declan's number one pet hate, credit notes. Investigate them as quickly as possible and put a root cause analysis and a structure in place to eliminate them. Okay. And the last bit of this question. Combating fraud, three different types of fraud. There's deliberate fraud, where intention all along, we were talking about it earlier on, where the person's intention is always to defraud the company. So there's deliberate fraud. There's a transaction that starts off legitimately, but then turns sour, okay? So people who kind of take advantage of the fact that, you know, that maybe they start off with good intentions, but then they need to kind of go down an evil route, if you want to look at it that way, due to financial circumstances. And then there's opportunistic fraud, okay? So people who kind of start off legitimately, see a weakness in your organization and say, oh, you know, I could do that, I could do this, and they take the opportunity of it, okay? So those are the three types of fraud, okay? So that's question five. Question six is just basically a follow-on from it, except question six is, what are the ingredients and content of a perfect invoice and statement, okay? So there's two separate sections on that within module four, okay? So do make sure you cover it off. It mentions ingredients. Well, it says ingredients and content for me, that would be basically the same thing. But it discusses the perfect invoice and then also the perfect statement, okay? So I would allocate half my time to the perfect statement and then the other half my time to the perfect invoice, okay? So just quickly on that, I mean, in terms of your invoice, there's the legal requirements of your invoice, there's things that legally have to go on your invoice. Secondly, there's best practice. And then thirdly, there's features that you can put on that would make it more effective, you know? Is it worth, for instance, putting your, well, I mean, an obvious one would be to have your bank account details on every statement. But I mean, is it worth potentially, I don't know, putting reminders in place on every invoice, for instance, if you are offering discounts, is it worth maybe kind of a reminder, you know, that would be an example of maybe best practice. White background, put the direct number of your accounts department on it, okay? So don't need them guessing as to how to contact you. Don't make it hard for them to contact you. Put the main number in your invoice. If you put the main number in your invoice and everything's going to your receptionist, then chances are it's going to delay the process. Make sure your invoice is clear and it's friendly. So put as much detail in there, but not too much detail that they can sort through it, okay? If they need to know what products they ordered, make sure that it's on there, okay? There's no point putting invoice for services rendered between 1st of March and 31st of March. You know, that's immediately going to prompt, what, okay? You gotta remember the people paying it are not necessarily the same people that ordered it, okay? People who ordered it might know it, people who paid it won't, okay? And then finally on the perfect statement, so the key thing here is, you know, have a look at what other, you will also be receiving statements in a company, have a look at what other companies are doing, line them all up and compare them and see which ones you like best, maybe try and mirror that as much as possible. A key one is on the aging for the statement. Make sure you're putting in due and overdue, okay? And that's it, okay? If you put in, as was alluded to in one of the discussions, if you put in a 30 plus box and a 60 plus box and a 90 plus box and 180 plus box, and if, God help us, a 365 plus box, you're kind of suggesting to your customer that we do have customers on our ledger who are taking us a year to pay, so why don't you? So that's kind of a subtle hint to the customer that they'd be able to get away with that. So due and overdue, okay? Okay, so that has left us 15 minutes to go through the real exam. Okay, so everybody will lean forward. This won't take too long though. So there we are. Okay. So, once again, four questions and you have 2 hours, okay? So please devote 30 minutes to each, okay? All right. So question one on the real exam comes from module one. Okay, module one, just to call out what module one was, it's the history and the theory of management, okay? And one of the features of module one was that there were authors in there, okay? Okay, so give me a couple of examples of what authors were there. We had Frederick Taylor, had Henri Fayol, we had Max Weber, we had Mayo and the Illumination Studies, and we had Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, okay? Okay, so a lot of authors, okay? So one of those authors is there in question one, one of the authors I just called out. So just to repeat, so we looked at Taylor, we looked at Fayol, we looked at Weber, we looked at Mayo, we looked at Maslow, okay? So one of those authors is in question one, and it's only that author. So we're not saying, okay, compare Fayol with Weber or Weber with Mayo.
Do you have to look at all of them?
Yeah. Sorry?
Do you have to look at all of them?
I'd look at all of them, yeah. Yeah. And a good reason, I'll come back to question one in a minute, but a good reason to look at all of them is there's also an author in question two. Okay? So if you know those five authors, that's half your exam sorted, okay? So, I mean, in terms of any kind of keywords to look out for, So question one is, well, I mean, I can kind of more or less tell it to you, so I won't tell you who the author is. So, I mean, it's asking you what are the characteristics of this author's model. Okay, so the word characteristics is there. Okay, so
in question one?
In question one, yeah. So when you're reading those five authors, think characteristics, okay? And then it says, and what are the potential benefits and problems? Okay, so that's the question. I haven't told you what author it is, but that's basically the question, okay? So you're looking for characteristics, okay? So the way it's structured is it says, what are the characteristics of the model and what are the potential benefits and problems? So for me, the way I would read it, like I said, I'm the one correcting it, so I would say characteristics is a half your question, benefits is half of the remaining half, so a quarter of your question, and then problems is the remaining 25%, okay? Just incidentally, just remind me before you go, I'll just remind you of what way the marks are. Well, I can tell you now, it's quick enough. Though. So you've done four assignments, so you have 10% for each of those, okay? So 40% is available for those 10 assignments, and then you have 60 marks going for this, okay? So it may well tell you, on this example here, I don't think it actually tells me what marks there are, but you know, you can basically say
which question is evenly.
They're evenly distributed, yeah. So if you want to look at it out of 60, it's 15, 15, and 15. If you want to take it out of 100, it's 25, 25, 25, 25. Okay, so question one is one of those five authors. Not telling you which author it is, but the question is basically, what are the characteristics of this person's model, and what are the potential benefits and problems, okay? So half of it on characteristics, and half on the benefits and problems, divide that evenly, okay? So question two is another one of those five authors, okay? So like I said, you study all five of them, that's half your exam sorted, and it's explain this author's model, basically. So explain. Show me you understand, okay? Would be my guidance, okay? You can learn it off and just rehash what you've learned off. And that'll be enough to pass, or probably a bit more. But if you really want to go for top marks, I would say show me, as you're telling me this person's model, show me that you understand what the model is, okay? Okay, so question one, question two are both from module one. And it's one of those. You have two of those five authors are there, okay? The other three are not, okay? Question three comes from module two, okay? And module two is all about, if you remember it, is all about managing yourself, okay? All right, so teamwork comes later in module three, and that's managing the credit function, but this is managing yourself, okay? Okay, but I'll narrow it down. Module two is quite long, okay, so I will narrow it down a little bit. It's more to do with how you manage yourself in the organization. So you may remember you did an assignment on time management. Okay, it's not something like time management. Time management is really quite particular to you, okay? It's how you handle yourself in an organization. So I'm gonna narrow it down even further for you. The question is in relation to one of the following topics. So it is either on power and organizational politics, okay? So it could be on that. Or it's on managing change. Or the last one, it's on managing conflict, okay? So you see what I mean there, you know, conflict, change, and politics, they're not fully within your own control, okay? So these are things that are partially within your control, but not fully, okay? So it's one of those three, okay? And in terms of the structure of the question, it says discuss and give examples of X, okay? So that's important, okay? So discuss for me means give me the benefits, give me the downsides, tell me do you think it's good, give me some examples, okay? So when you're planning, when you're reading through your power and politics, your change and your conflict sections, you might be thinking, okay, where have I seen change before? Where have I seen conflict before? And be ready to, now you don't need to give me a novel, it's not the assignments, okay? Don't give me a novel, but it'd be good to give me a couple of lines. Just a couple of quick lines, kind of says, I saw this in a company I worked with years ago, this is how it was happened, okay? Okay, so that's question three. So that comes from module two, which is managing yourself. So either on power and politics, managing change or managing conflict, okay? Question four is from module three, which is on teamwork, okay? And my hint for you on this one is quite short. It's basically three words. Read your assignment. So you all did a teamwork assignment. Read that, okay? Know that. Be able to give me back some of that, okay? Now there is an author mentioned in it, okay? It's not quite as simple as that. I mean, so there's two, you know, there's two things in it. So the first, I will cover off the first bit. The second bit is, the second bit just refers to one of the author, okay? One of the authors, okay? But essentially your assignment does it, okay? There's, you know, there's a couple of key authors on teamwork, not many, okay? It's a prominent author.
Is it discuss?
So it is, it is what are the key, I can't go too much further. It says what are, it's what, it doesn't say discuss, no. And that's in the direct answer to your question. So
is
I think you can kind of guess what way it's going.
Is this exam in the morning or the afternoon? Probably. Do you know?
Afternoon. I don't actually. No. Declan covers the exams themselves.
Right. So
I do this stuff.
The afternoon. Could study more.
Yeah, I don't know.
You got your lunch break.
So I don't know. If you don't know, we better find out.
Anyway, we know the day, I suppose.
You know the day. I'll just mention the exam. So none of you actually know the actual time of the exam.
Do you have two exams?
Yeah.
Yeah, two.
Yeah, two exams. Okay. Your management and then your Declan.
Yeah.
I'd say.
I'll just see. Is there? I don't think there's a time on it. Let me just double check. No, it's just there's a date on the exam, but there's no time.
All right. Anyway, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think in all your cases though, you're doing something between 10 and 12.
Yeah.
I mean, you won a 10 and 12 and won a 2 and 4.
Yeah.
I suppose if you're planning on studying during lunchtime, just make absolutely certain that.
So who
I did invigilate an exam a couple of years ago and somebody did say, but should this on the afternoon? And it was down in Cork, so I rang Declan and said, no, no, no. This morning. So don't give paper 2, give paper 1.
Oh, sorry, management is 10 to 12 and then 2 to 4 is advanced credit management.
Okay.
Morning,
so you meet. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Chirpy.
Nice and chirpy. Okay, great. So nice chirpy answers from you guys. We need the real heavy stuff in the afternoon. Okay. So that's question. That's question four. Okay. So there is a prominent author mentioned in it. Okay.
Who did you say the author was?
I didn't. So there's a prominent author in there. So it's not an obscure author. It's one that appears a couple of times. Okay. So that is the direction you should be.
Start with the letter.
Somewhere between A and Z. So that's question four, okay? But if you read your assignment, you're already off to a very, very, very good start. So maybe read a little bit around the stuff that you would have read for that assignment, but you're off to a really good start to read the assignment. Okay, question five. So question five and question six, so they're exactly the same format as you have in the mock exam, okay? Okay, so we're gonna be covering off, so it's exactly the same format, so we cover off, there's 21 items that are in module four, okay? So module four is written a bit differently to the other modules, okay? I wrote, well, I mean, not originally, but I'm the person who put together modules 1, 2, and 3. Declan actually wrote module 4, so the writing styles are a bit different, but topics are a bit different as well. But anyway, in short, there's 21 different topics on there, okay? Six of them, 1, 2, 3, not six, 8 have actually appeared on the mock exam, okay? Yeah, you with me?
No.
You're not, okay. Question five, we'll go back to the mock
question
exam.
Question five and six are module 4.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So between those two questions,
right,
there are six, the six things in question six, okay? The six topics covered in module 6, and it says, write a note on 4 of the following.
Right.
Okay? Does it say 4 on the mock exam? It's 4 on the real exam anyway. So you have a bit of choice.
Yeah,
says
four.
Says four. Okay, you have a bit of choice, okay? So the six, you have to write on four of them for question. Let's stick with question five for now, okay? The six on there, okay? You have to write on four of them, okay? Now, so you have six there. Out of the 21 that are on your... So this is helpful, so do listen closely. Out of the 21, six of them are on your mock exam, okay? Out of those six, only one of them is on the real one, okay? So you can rule out the other five, and I'll tell you which one it is. It's internal controls, okay? I'll give you that one, all right? It's only a small amount of marks, but internal controls is on the real exam. It's also on the mock exam, okay? So that's your basic housekeeping. You're checking your bank account and every day and your credit notes and whatever else, okay? That's your basic. So that's on the real one. The other five that appear on the mock are not on the real one,
okay?
So you can cross them all out, okay? I'm going to give you further clues now in a minute, but those five you can cross out, okay? So if they're on the mock, apart from internal controls,
okay,
they're not on the real one, okay?
16.
Now on question six, I kind of have to take these two together. So question six, you know, as you saw on the mock one, it's, you know, mock one was, okay, perfect invoice and the perfect statement. So it's a bit more detailed, it's about a page on each, okay? So you need to be more writing, okay? They're among the longer sections, okay? Again, it's not the statement and it's not the invoice. You're not talking, you can cross off perfect invoice, you can cross off perfect statement, they don't appear, okay? And I've actually given you one more clue than I planned on giving you. So cross off the ones that are on the mock exam, okay, apart from internal controls. I'm also giving you a few more you can cross off now as well. There is a section on, the title of the section is, what should your terms and conditions contain? Okay, it's not on there, you can cross it off. One called generating funding for your business. A little bit different to managing the cash flow, okay? But it's not there, okay? Generating funding for your business, cross it off. Don't need to study it. Fixing your own credit ratings. You can cross it off. And then I'll give you two more. Managing your exposure to customers. You can cross off, it's not there. And finally, there's a section towards the end called collection strategies. Cross that off, okay? So you're left with a fairly small list there, okay? So you're crossing all of those off that I've just given you, and you're also crossing off the ones from the mock exam, apart from internal controls. So you're left with a fairly small list there. So those are the ones you need to focus on, okay? Now I will say about this section, it's quite an easy one to get kind of the basic marks, you know, to get kind of 50-60 type percentage. So from a studying point of view, an hour would probably have you, you'd probably be fairly competent of those. It's probably not the easiest section to really score the top marks in, because the actual sections and the notes are quite short. Now if you want to, you know, if you feel you can write around them and add maybe your own examples and so on, yeah, you'll score pretty highly on those. So the only guidance I'll say is quite good ones to do if you're kind of aiming for maybe 50, 60, 65, that kind of percent. If you're really shooting for top marks, there's nothing wrong with either, you know, but if you're really shooting for top marks, you might, they're probably harder to score the top marks in. Okay, it's easier to impress me on discussions on things like kind of teamwork and the authors and things like that, you know, they're a bit wider, okay? Any questions? Nope. Well, not best of luck. So I'll get you'll see Jacqueline on the day. He can answer any questions you have. Then I'll get the exam scripts that afternoon. And I'm on holidays that Friday, so I'm going to be correcting Udo over the 4 or 5 days in between. All right. I would probably suggest, there's not an awful lot of benefit in going a fifth or a sixth question, okay? I think do, you know, answer four and four only, okay? If you're really struggling, you want to kind of fire darts almost and try to hope that you land one. Somebody did that last year, not in the diploma. The only other thing I'll say is do beware, this is the diploma course, it's not the cert. So I suppose the level of expectation may be a little higher, okay? Okay, well, not best of luck. Any remaining assignments, I can accept them up to the exam. I can't accept them after that. I won't have time to do any corrections other than the exams, the week of the exam. So once they turn over the paper, if they're not in, they have to be out to discount. Okay.
Thank you.